Welcome aboard the Athletics Can't Wait Jets podcast, your nonstop shop for all things Jets with Tim McMaster, Zach Rosenblatt, and Marissa Dunn.
Can't wait!
The draft is over. The Jets got some depth up front. They got some fun, talented weapons as well that'll make Aaron Rodgers happy. And we also have a fascinating story that has joined the Jets as well. We're going to get into that along with the departures, Mekhi Becton, John Franklin Myers. Plenty to talk about on the Can't Wait podcast. I'm Tim McMaster along with Zach Rosenblatt, our Jets reporter at The Athletic, and Marissa Dunn, our producer. And we are joined for this post-draft episode by Nick Bumgarner, our draft guru. What do you want us to call you, Nick? Draft guru at The Athletic?
I go analyst slash senior writer is what I do these
days. There you go.
I'm all over the place. Yeah.
That sounds important.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yes, I like that. Yeah,
exactly. You and Zach have both survived another draft. Yes. So, Zach, I'll go to you first. How does it feel on this Monday after the end of the draft?
It's always like you're in a daze for a few days after the draft, especially because it goes so late. We're writing so late. Then we wake up and we do it all over again. And then on top of that, Sunday, I had to drive an hour and a half for my nephew's birthday party. I was happy to do it, but it was a lot. So yeah, I'm just worn down, but still, you know, now I have to turn the page and start. I love this time of the year outside of my fatigue, because as we're going to talk about Nick's story that he wrote, like, I love being able to get to know these rookies that they draft and their backstory and trying to get to know them and write stories about them. I try to do that every year. So that's a fun part of this stretch. And then once I get out of it, then things will be a little more calm as we get into like OTAs and stuff. But that's why I love the draft, though, because we know nothing about, I mean, Nick does, but I know nothing about these kids really until we start looking at, as we get closer to the draft. And then once they get drafted, and then you start looking at Dane's Beast, you look at articles like the one Nick wrote, and you just kind of dig into these guys' backgrounds, and you learn a lot of these guys have really cool stories of how they got here. Everybody has a unique story, and you think you're not going to hear a new one every year, and then you hear a new one, as we're going to discuss. And
that's why it's so cool.
Yeah,
pretty wild.
And Nick, your draft season is different than you know. Obviously, Zach is thinking about, okay, who could the Jets potentially get? Then they get them, and like he said, dig in, figure out who these guys are, and write those stories. Your work's all done. All done ahead of time. So now it's just like, whew, right? Relief.
Yeah, it really, like, I try to tell people, it's really weird. We were saying earlier, like, the day after feels like the last day of school, like, or whatever. Like, the Sunday after feels like you're out of school. But it's really weird because, like, you know, we do spend all year, more or less. Dane always calls it an 18-month process, because he's like, Dane is 6 months ahead of the NFL, usually, on how he evaluates. So, like, I put in the 2025 guys into my sheet like a couple weeks ago, because like to a point in April, early April, where like it's done. Like, I'm not writing the beast. I don't have to. I'm Dane doing that. Like, so you're sort of like you did what you know, you've watched all the tape. You've done all that stuff. I'm not drafting guys. So you're kind of like, we need to get this draft over with here so we can sort of move on. So, yes, it feels like the school's out, but we're already on to the next one. That already started. Dane's been on to the next one for like 6 months, for sure, somehow. But yeah,
I don't know how his brain works. How he's
I don't
able
either.
Because he obviously did a million interviews after he was Dane, done.
Dane, and I say this completely with all on it, like, he could work for an NFL team right now, and like, it wouldn't be a problem for him. I don't know many people in the media that could claim that, but like,
stay away from our Dane.
Very unique. Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. Don't ever get any ideas, but he's awesome.
Before we get to really one of the main reasons we wanted to have you on, Nick, was because of Quantez Stiggers, because you wrote the story back in March and it's fantastic. But before we get to that, some other interesting picks. We talked a lot about Olu on Thursday night after the draft, but since then, the Jets have added, obviously, some other intriguing pieces. Malachi Corley is a guy that, by all accounts, they had circled as basically, you know, if we don't get Adunze on day one, we're going to do everything we can to get this guy. Do you agree with the team's excitement?
Oh, yeah. He's one of my favorite receivers. And to get him where they got him, actually, I think is really, really good value down there, because I thought he would have been possibly early second. Like, he, when he gets the ball in his hands, he's a running back. He just completely turns into a running back. Like, I'm trying to, it's hard to comp him to too many people because he is shorter, but he's also like 220 pounds. So it's like, when he gets going downhill, I think some people have compared him to like a heavier, obviously this is why Aaron probably liked it, a Randall Cobb with more bulk in the bottom half. And the other thing with Corley is like, you can't press him. He will knock people over, like right off the snap. Very physical, tough player. Like, I love that kid. He's really, really good and just dominated people at the, you know, Conference USA level, and then went to the Senior Bowl and actually held his own too. So that was a great pick. I actually thought maybe a lot of people talked about Brock Bowers, right, for Aaron Rodgers. I actually kind of think Corley gives them some of what you would have gotten from Bowers, weirdly enough, in a different package.
So what do you like? So he obviously is great at the short yardage stuff, and he's going to be a great weapon for Aaron. But like, do you see that he didn't really do a lot of like routes like down the field, obviously. Like, do you see that as an area he can like that with some work, he can get good at that too? Like, he can become a more complete receiver, or do you see him more as like this type of guy that's going to be short yardage probably?
Yeah, I feel like it depends on the situation, and like the fact that he's playing with Wilson is probably going to create more opportunities, you know, down the field for him. But I think for the most part, he's probably an underneath guy, and I think that's probably why, you know, some teams maybe were a little bit, you know, further down on him. But the one thing I think too, you can, you know, like the 49ers have done this forever with Debo and other people. Like, he's a guy that you can get involved in the run game. Like, the Lions do that with St. Brown. They line him up in the backfield. I mean, like, you know, and do crazy stuff. Let him run a route out of the backfield and get him on a linebacker. Like, he's a matchup problem. I think he'll move around a lot and do some cool stuff that way.
When you look at every draft, there's always the guys that go top of the first round, and a lot of them are household names. Sometimes there's guys that sneak up the boards late. But there's always the guys that are household names that go later in the draft for whatever reason. And Travis is kind of one of those guys. Obviously, Florida State was in the national title conversation until he got hurt last fall. And then they didn't even make the playoff despite going undefeated and winning the ACC title. How do you rate him? He's undersized, but the Jets are obviously bringing him in as a project. So how do you look at Jordan Travis?
Yeah, I preferred a couple guys over where they got him was fine. I preferred a couple, like I really like Pratt, the kid from Tulane. Like, I would have preferred him maybe over him, but I understand the appeal with Travis because of how tough he is, like mentally, and just I think he's a leader. He's got some of that Jalen Hurts quality to him that guys will follow him. And there's just like him and Bo Nix, like completely, and Travis probably more so, like completely changed his like life as a player. Like he redesigned himself as a player once they got Kenny Dillingham in there, and then some other things. Like, he was not gonna make it probably like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and then like slowly but surely he just started getting better and better and better. And you know, even after that injury, you know, he gets hurt like that, and one of the coolest things, he was at the Shrine Bowl, you know, and invited him obviously, and you know, he got hurt, and I think he contacted the Shrine Bowl and was like, hey, I still want to come, I'll be on crutches, but like, I want to, you know, I know a lot of the guys, I want to, you know, help support these dudes and then interview with the teams. And like, I thought that was cool too. Like, he's a really, really, really good kid. I think it's going to be a good fit in your locker room. I think he's a backup quarterback. I don't think he's, you know, he could probably get you through a couple games. I don't think he's a future starter, but you know, down there in the fifth and sixth round, that's kind of what you're hoping for anyway. So yeah.
Did you, before the injury, did you view him as like this round level of prospect anyway?
I didn't think that he was like, there's enough questions with his you know, accuracy and arm talent. Like, he doesn't have the biggest arm. His accuracy wasn't very consistent, but like, any, you know, he does a lot of stuff out of the pocket, which I frankly in the NFL is a good thing. Like, he would do a lot of off platform, and so I think he's a fighter and a scrapper and a guy that'll find a way, but probably not gonna have enough talent to be a starter full time.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we should get into day three, which obviously, yeah, the main event, day three. I knew that the Jets hosted him for a visit, as did many other teams, Quantes Stiggers, who I'm talking about. I think even just if you just look at his bio, like, it's just like, okay, this is a kid from the CFL. What does that even mean? There were even reporters in the room like, how can a guy from the CFL get drafted?
I know.
But he has obviously a very unique story. I'll let you hit a lot of the main points, but like, how did you hear about this kid first? And then once you dug into his background, like I said, these are the kind of stories we were talking about this earlier. Like, these are the kind of stories that I love doing. Because you find out all these amazing things. And then as you're talking to somebody, they're telling you these things, and in your head, you're like, oh my God, can't wait to write that. Like how many times did you hit that while you were talking to him and his mom? Yeah.
The entire time really with him, because like, I'd heard about him through the Shrine Bowl. Like, the Shrine Bowl was really what got him on the radar in America. I guess.
Yeah.
Cause you know, his agent, Fred Lyles, they scrapped really hard to get him in there, and they wanted to the Senior Bowl or Shrine Bowl. They got him in there, obviously, because he's, you know, defensive player of the year last year in CFL.
Yeah.
Everything else aside. So I hear all this and I'm like, okay, so did he play in college? And somebody's like, no. And I'm like, wait, no, he didn't play anywhere in college. And they're like, no, not one snap of college football ever.
Oh my God.
He was discovered in a 7-on-7 league, essentially, like playing pickup ball. It was, you know, essentially.
Yeah, fan controlled football, right?
Fan controlled football. Like his mom, you know, and the story goes, like, he went to a small school in Atlanta. And he was a good high school player, and he probably was under recruited and got lost because he went to a really small high school. But he was going to play, I think it was Lane College or one of those smaller ones there in the Atlanta area. And then his dad had gotten in a car accident like the previous winter and then died in September. And it was right during COVID too. So like, he was like, you know, crippled with depression and everything else. He just quit school and just dropped out, quit football, quit the whole thing. And you know, his mom and his fiance were the two that just would not let him quit, more or less. Like, his mom told me that she lost count, but she would just surf the internet, Facebook, anything, and just look up like football in Atlanta. And if anything showed, like, even if she said she signed up for a couple of fantasy leagues because she didn't know what they were. Cause she was like, I mean, like, I want to play, you know, and finally they found this one and like, he eventually agreed to do it. And like, I mean, just random, like a random guy that had ties to the CFL is there, sees him work out, makes a call. And Quantes is at like his job at the truck wash, and he gets a DM from the GM of the Argonauts on Instagram. And that's how, and then he got a contract in the mail and, you know, so on and so forth. But the crazy part about him is every place he went along this journey, like, he just kept shocking people. They were like, I can't believe this kid's this good. And it just kept happening. And he did it at the Shrine Bowl too. Like, he was one of the best players at the Shrine Bowl. And I can remember after his first day at the Shrine Bowl with pads, because everybody there had sort of heard of him and everyone wanted to see him. He was like the bell of the ball. Every single team, I think, had a scout that stopped him and grabbed him, like, to, before he couldn't get off the field. So I didn't even get to talk to him there because he didn't have time. I talked to him later, whatever it was. So, really cool kid, really cool story. His family's awesome. His mom is one of the coolest people I've ever talked to. Like, she reminds me of my mom and so many other people in some of those ways, right? Of like, she would not let this kid like give up because she knew how good he was, and he loves football, right? So it's just a really cool story in general.
You talked a lot about his fiance in the story as well. And it sounds like, I think he said at one point, like, she's the female version of me, I'm the male version of her. We're just perfect. But like, similar experiences, right? She had a tragic death in her family,
right?
A couple of years before he lost his dad, and really helped him get through it all.
Yeah. She lost her sister. Her sister was killed actually, in a, like a random, you know, it was a gunshot from a stray, you know, I think a drive-by out in the street, and went through her bedroom and killed her. And it was one of those like horrific things that she didn't, you know, goes into this depression herself. And she had kind of explained to me that once she saw, you know, because she was with Quantes when they got the call that his dad had passed. And once she saw how he reacted, she was like, oh, this is exactly what I'm, you know. And she had said that helping him through it helped her out of it, right? Which is, I think, so many times you hear that story with people that go through depression and things like that. So they're just like, they, you know, fighters all the way. I mean, and when you talk to them, and this is the thing with Quantes, is like, he talks about this stuff like it's not a big deal. Some of it, I think, is because he said it so many times. Like, he said the story 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But he talks about it like it's not a big deal. Like, it's like, this is just what happened. And this is just, of course she was there to help me through all this, because why wouldn't she be? She's in my life, and I wouldn't have her in here otherwise. It's just, he's so like matter of fact about it, but it's like, it's overwhelming in some ways to grab it all. When you hear all this, you're like, all this stuff can't really be true. Like he said, there's some people that have compared it to a fairy tale, like the story of like how he was able to be lost and found again. And it's just like really cool stuff. Really cool. And I mean, talk about a kid who loves football. That's number one right there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you had a great line in there. I just want in your story that I want to read, because I think it was fantastic. Right. And you said depression can be like a deep hole with steep sides and no ladder. Sometimes the only way to come out comes when someone else falls in. And that was, that was like your line about him and his girlfriend.
Yeah. That's what it reminded me of. Yeah.
Yeah. Not even just even like grief too, like that depression, grief. Like it's so true until you talk to somebody else who has dealt with it.
Right.
Like, and so that's why I think a lot about DJ Reed with this, you know, because that's part of why I think he's going to such an amazing situation. They have a great cornerbacks coach who he's built a great relationship with. Tony Oden like prank called him during this process and was like, hey, it's the IRS. I'm calling to make sure you've paid your Canadian tax. He was like, what?
Oh, God, that's really so good. I can see him being like, I did.
Yeah, exactly. Which is so funny. So he's going to the room with Sauce Gardner, you know, who went through his trials and tribulations.
Right, yeah.
A young kid. And then DJ Reed, who lost his dad. He found out he lost his dad, as we've talked about in this podcast, as he was walking out onto the field in week one, played it, then talked to us like, yeah, my dad died, this, and this happened. It's like the way these guys have the ability to process it. I think he's going into an amazing situation. He won't have to play right away necessarily. He's going to be able to develop. But anyway, to touch on all your, I don't know if you saw the Jets video. I'm sure you did, of the draft phone call. I haven't yet.
I got to check that out.
The Jets have it where like 9 people talk to each player, but it actually it like was very resonant here, because for they start with Joe Douglas, and they go to Sala, and they go to Jeff Ulbrich, and Jeff Ulbrich is an emotional guy anyway, but he's like getting choked up as he's talking to him. And then they go to Tony Oden, and then they go to the security guy who I guess like interviewed him to find out his background. They develop a bond, and that guy starts like, this is like, he's a character.
That's so cool.
And he's starting to cry talking to him. Like these guys, they probably met Quantez like a couple times.
That's the thing is, okay. So when I talked to Quantez, because I set it up, we set up the talk, you know, I talked to him, a lot of it was on the phone, but one of the times I talked to him, he like conference called his mom in, then he got his fiance. I mean, we did it all together that day. Like he got all these people on the horn, like bang, bang, bang. And we just talked to him, and he was like, just the nicest guy that can get along with anybody. Like that's what it reminded me of. And I just kept thinking the whole time, like he is going to be incredible in someone's locker room. Incredible. He is a good football player. I mean, he's a safety corner hybrid type guy. I think he'll be able to hang and be a guy at the bottom of a roster somewhere and play special teams. But like in the locker room, man, there's nothing I've never seen. And I mean, this is what I do. I try to find these stories all year long, right? Like people with hearts, you know, people that have overcome this. I've never seen anything like this. That was a new one on me. I was like straight from high school to the pros, man. That doesn't happen.
Unreal. So, yeah.
Unreal. Really cool stuff.
Really awesome. Yeah. We do this job where we're not supposed to become like fans, and we're not supposed to necessarily root for guys, but you know, nobody's going to blame you if you're like, you know, outwardly rooting.
I got to get my Quantes jersey. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or get the CFL jersey too.
So the Argonauts jersey. That's a good call.
But, I'm happy. I'm paying attention to the Jets, so I didn't see the story initially when it came out, when you wrote it, but I'm happy I did now, because it was great writing and it was a great story. So I'm happy you're able to come on here and talk about it. Yeah. I'm sure you had a keen eye on what was going on with him.
Oh yeah. I was very curious where he would go. Right. Cause it's like, he didn't get to the combine either. He didn't get the combine invite, which I thought was kind of a bummer. A lot of people were a little surprised at that one, but he got like 30 teams. I think he might've had the whole NFL show up to his pro day.
Wow.
And when I heard that, I was like, cause his agent, you know, agents are agents, but they were like, I think third, fourth round. I'm like, I don't think third or fourth round, but like, I think he's for sure going to get drafted, but you don't know. On these things. So it was just like, it would be a real bummer if nobody, I had to think somebody was going to take him. When I heard the Jets didn't want to give up that Mr. Irrelevant pick, I actually wondered if that was going to be what they were going to do. Like maybe that would actually been pretty cool, but so whatever. Yeah. Either way. But yeah, I thought that's just a great story and someone was going to take him. If not for nothing else, it was for the story. They're going to draft him, you know? So yeah, good stuff.
Awesome.
All right. Awesome stuff from you, Nick. Awesome story as well. Anybody who hasn't gotten a chance to read it, go find it. It is, you know,
it is in the description of the YouTube page below if you are watching this on YouTube. So
That's why she's the best producer. and it'll be in the description of the audio as well once we get that up. So check that out from Nick Bumgarner. Nick, thank you for joining us. Good luck getting ready for next year's draft.
Enjoy some vacation.
We'll get some vacation in for sure. Yeah. We'll watch some kids play soccer. All right. Sounds good. Thanks,
bye,
guys.
Nick. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Awesome stuff. The one thing he referenced that I didn't want to keep him and dive into it too much more is like the football player, right? We know he's talented, but obviously he's a little bit of a later pick.
Yeah.
There's no pressure as far as the Jets go and cornerbacks, right? But they're good there.
That's why it's a great situation. Yeah.
Yeah. So where does he like, Nick seemed to think like special teamer who could kind of fill in, but like, you know, long-term, is this a guy who could be like your first backup corner? Does he have that kind of like raw skill?
So I think it was a really smart pick in general because you're drafting a developmental corner or he could play safety. I think some people think he might long-term be a safety too. And the Jets, if you look at even just purely based on contracts, DJ Reed, Michael Carter II, Brandon Echols, Isaiah Oliver at corner, all free agents next year. Safety, Ashton Davis on a one-year deal, Chuck Clark on a one-year deal. So like there's room for him to grow into becoming a starter or a guy with a key role. But as a rookie, unless, you know, the worst case scenario happens, which you can never rule out with the Jets, I can't imagine he'd play very much on defense this year. But there's roles on special teams to be had. So I'm going to be very fascinated to watch his journey. One thing I wanted to say is, you know, as a reporter, as I hear interesting stories as the draft is going on and we talk to these guys on Zoom during the draft and you hear all these details and you look in the beast, I'm like, ooh, this is a great feature. I can't wait to get going on this one. And then Nick stole it from me. So that's the one reason why I'm mad at Nick, because I wanted to write that, but I'm not going to do it. Like there's some stories you just accept you're not going to do better than the person that already wrote it. And Nick did a great job with it. I'll try and find another way to cover him at some point in camp and stuff like that. But he's a guy that I think the fans are going to really – in training camp, there's always a darling, and he's going to be one of them, I think, because everybody's going to hear a story over and over again now.
If his Hard Knocks was back, he'd get an episode.
Oh, man, yeah, he would have been so good on Hard Knocks. Yeah, and he's a great personality. Like, we even saw that right away on the Zoom. But anyway, now that we're done talking about the fifth-round corner, I guess we can talk about
that. That's, like, the cool stuff.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I love that stuff more than anything. But I think the fans do want to hear some other stuff. So,
yeah,
so
the only things, other picks that we could
dive yeah, in. the only picks we haven't really covered yet on the show is Mr. Irrelevant, which we can get to. But then the two running backs, and I think it's worth discussing. Braylon Allen, fourth rounder, number 134, the running back out of Wisconsin. And then in the fifth round at 173, they get Isaiah Davis, running back out of San Diego State. When they took Allen, my reaction was, yeah, got to add, you know, good spot, running back depth. He seems like he's very different than Breece Hall and that he's like a physical guy. But then when they take another one in the next round, you kind of scratch your head a little bit. So like, just get into what the team was thinking in taking two running backs in the same draft when you have a star already.
Even beyond the star part of it, I think the bigger issue for me, and again, this is the fifth round, so you're really just taking flyers on guys anyway, but they could have used a guard, like somebody to develop as a backup. They could have used a defensive lineman, especially once JFM got traded, which we're going to get into. Could have used a safety. So that's kind of like what I thought they would do with one of those picks. Instead, they went with another power, strong running back. I don't think it was necessarily the smartest pick, but I'm not ready to say it was a bad pick either, because if they think this guy is very good, then he's going to come in, and him and Braylon Allen are both going to fight to be the RB2. They're going to fight to be the RB3. I think what we've seen this offseason with a lot of their moves, I think they're going to be transitioning to more of like a power running style instead of all outside zone. So, you know, a guy like John Simpson and Morgan Moses, like these guys play in that kind of system, and so they're going to really try and grind it out. They're a team that thinks they're going to be holding a lot of leads, so the guys can get those short yardage and, you know, move the sticks. I think that's what they view these two guys as. Braylon Allen, I was really high on coming into the draft. I was very intrigued with him as like a counter to Breece Hall. Isaiah Davis is a guy they hosted for a top 30 visit. They didn't host Braylon Allen, actually, but they hosted Isaiah Davis, and he was really, really productive at the FCS level. I don't know. Clearly, Joe Douglas had him ranked highly on his board, and he decided he wanted to take another running back. And somebody pointed out on Twitter today, I think he's drafted a running back in every draft class with the Jets, which is pretty crazy. Not all of them have worked out, but I don't necessarily agree with the draft pick. I don't think it deserves maybe as much criticism as it's gotten because you're in the fifth round. But if they got two quality running backs and you have a three-headed monster all of a sudden. So I don't know. I wouldn't have done it, but I don't blame them necessarily, I guess.
What does it mean for Izzy Abanikanmi?
Yeah, I mean if they keep four or five running backs, then he's fine. You know, he's more like Breece Hall than the other two guys. So like he's good insurance for Breece, but you know, the Jets kind of told you what they felt about Izzy last year when they didn't play him until the very end of the year, even after cutting Dalvin Cook and all that stuff. They didn't like that he wasn't able to help in pass protection, whereas these two guys, I think, are pretty good, especially Braylon Allen. They need running backs who are able to help with the blocking. If the goal is to protect Aaron Rodgers, clearly. I think that's above all else what they're doing. And so these two guys are better at that than Izzy. Izzy's going to have to – I wouldn't say he's definitely going to get cut or anything like that. I think he's a bubble player now that needs to have a good camp. They like having a fullback. Maybe getting two guys that are good at pass protection maybe makes it so they don't need Nick Bodden as much anymore. And so then you keep four running backs and Izzy can be the fourth. Like, maybe that's the thought process. But yeah, Izzy would, I would say, stock down based on these draft picks. Like, if we're going to go through guys who were positively or negatively impacted, like, he definitely was negatively impacted by this draft.
I guess if these two guys, you know, are the physical back, the blocking backs,
yeah,
you still need, in theory, a backup if Breece does get banged up, or Nick, that can do more of those things. So maybe there's, yeah, space, or maybe, you know, if he doesn't make the active roster, maybe that's he's a lock to move over to the practice squad, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Irrelevant, thoughts? Jalen Key,
yeah. You know,
they needed a safety, and he's from Alabama. These aren't bad things.
I mean, he's not, when you're a seventh round pick, you're not going to be a lock to make the roster, though most draft picks Joe has drafted historically do make the team, although Zach Kuntz didn't initially last year. But yeah, he's a safety that I think should be able to fight for a role on special teams. I think he'll compete with Jerick Bernard Converse, who they drafted in the sixth round last year. Those guys will probably fight it out to be the fourth safety. And if they keep five, then the other one will probably have a good shot at it. But, you know, he's pretty tall. He's taller than they usually have for their safeties. But, you know, there's obviously a reason why he lasted that long. So he has to fight his way onto the roster. But he's a guy they liked a lot, obviously, because I think the interesting part about the Mr. Irrelevant spot is everybody's negotiating with the undrafted free agents by the time you get to that point. So they could grab a guy that they were worried maybe they weren't going to be able to sign as an undrafted free agent. And maybe that's why they drafted him instead of drafting a guy like, you know, they signed a few undrafted rookies that had draftable grades, and maybe they already had deals in place with those guys. And they're like, we don't have a deal in place with this guy, let's draft him. So I think that was probably the process there. I'm surprised they only drafted one offensive lineman ultimately. But maybe they're going to add a veteran of some sort to add some more depth, because I do think they need at least one more depth piece on the O-line.
All right, we are going to get to the undrafted free agents as well. But first, let's just talk about the big departures. I mean, Mekhi Becton was going to be a departure, right?
Yeah.
We know that. But now it's official, and it's intriguing that he's going to Philadelphia. And it's a deal, 1 year, $5.5 million, I think. Are you surprised by the location, by the contract, anything about this?
I wouldn't say I'm surprised. If anything, I think it was smart from Mekhi's camp I don't know if they chose the team as much as I don't think there was like a heavy amount of interest. I'd heard early in the process that the Bengals were interested because the offensive line coach has a connection to Mekhi. But ultimately they instead signed Trent Brown, and they didn't really have a need for Mekhi anymore. And I think they drafted an offensive lineman early as well. So he kind of lingered on the market, and then the Eagles of all teams are always going to be a team that's going to take a flyer on a guy with talent. And Mekhi, for all his faults, you know, he's a big, athletic, strong kid. Obviously there's health concerns, there's some performance concerns, there's some attitude concerns, but if anybody's going to fix an offensive lineman or get him going on the right track, it's Jeff Stoutland. I mean, he has a history of doing it over and over and over again. He's the best offensive line coach maybe ever. Him and Bill Callahan are right up there in terms of modern day ones. You know, but it was either his best two situations would be to go play for a Bill Callahan or Jeff Stoutland. And he went to play for Jeff Stoutland, where he can be the top backup behind Jordan Mailata, and he can be the top backup behind Lane Johnson if he's willing to go to right tackle, which he very openly complained about when he was in New York. So I think if he has the mindset that he's going to work hard and take the coaching well and take the hard coaching well, it could work out really well. If he keeps going down the path that he did when he was with the Jets, then it might not work out. But I'm very intrigued by it. And I get what the Eagles are doing. You know, you're buying in on a guy with traits, and if you can make it work, then you maybe have a future starter or a future replacement for Lane, or you go and get a nice compensatory pick next offseason when he hits free agency again. He was never going to return to the Jets. I think as the offseason progressed, I kept getting questions from fans about like if they think he could come back and be a swing tackle. I would say coaches were not big fans of him, and he was not a big fan of the coaching staff. So that was never happening. So he went to Philly. I'm sure Howie asked Joe Douglas about him, and Joe gave him the full report, but Howie was still comfortable with everything that he heard. So
So there you go. It's a different story when he's your first round pick versus he's the guy that you got a discount rate for free agency. So the things you're measuring are a little bit different. And then the other departure was via trade, John Franklin Myers. This was one that you hinted at last time we had the show. And then he hinted at it over Twitter, and then it became reality that he was heading to the Broncos. It's a 2025 sixth rounder coming back. The
2026, actually.
I'm sorry, 2026. Yeah. The draft pick, to me, doesn't really match up with the player, which makes you think it's the salary, right?
Yeah, this is purely a salary dump type of thing. You know, just to, I saw a question about this, just to give a little behind the scenes, like sometimes in this job, you're told things or you hear things and you're told that you can't report it until a certain point or whatever. And so in order not to burn a source or whatever, you listen. But I was able to like hint that this was coming because I knew it was. It was in the works for long before the trade actually happened. You know, JFM had already talked to the Broncos at length about, you know, because the Jets gave him permission to talk to other teams. So it's not like they did it illegally, but he talked to Sean Payton, I think within the week before the trade happened, and Sean Payton was into the kind of player that was going to be joining their team. They liked his mindset and the kind of player he is, which I think he's not a great player, but I think he's a very good one. And they worked out a renegotiated contract, which he was going to have to do because his cap hit was pretty significant. So I think he now has a 2-year deal worth, like, I'm blanking. I can't remember what the number was. I don't have it in front of me, but it was essentially what the cap it was going to be for the Jets this year. You know, I think you could argue that, you know, the way they approached the defensive line, I don't know if I necessarily agree with a lot of the decisions they've made necessarily. I think Hassan Reddick is a stud and they're going to love having him. Obviously Jermaine's a stud. They signed Javon Kinlaw to about $7 million, and that's what JFM is going to be making this year. I guess the debate, you might debate whether you'd rather have Javon Kinlaw or JFM. I think they told JFM he wasn't going to play as much, and so they let him seek a trade. But now I think the defensive end depth chart, which a year ago was the strongest position on the team before we knew how good the corners were going to be, all of a sudden looks like they don't really have any proven depth right now. You have Hassan Reddick, you have Jermaine Johnson. They're probably going to play a lot. They like rotating. Will McDonald, if he wasn't going to play a big role before, he is now. And he's not someone who really has even much experience as a run stopper, let alone the size to be a run stopper. Michael Clemens, I thought, had a bad year last year. He in theory has the flexibility to slide inside like JFM did, which was his value. JFM could rush from the inside, stop the run from the outside. So, you know, they don't really have a run stopper defensive end. So they're really going all in on the idea that they're going to have a lot of leads. So they're going to be rushing the passer more and things like that. I don't know how they weren't able to get better than a sixth in 2026 for a guy that I think is a solid player, but clearly teams weren't willing to pay that contract. So, you know, this is kind of where the Jets are at. They're playing right up against the salary cap, and they have to make some hard decisions because of some bad ones they've made in other years. I think in total right now they're at over $50 million in dead cap on players that are not on the roster. Like that's including the Zach Wilson and all that stuff. And that's not one player. Like you look at like the Broncos, they're obviously paying $1 billion for Russell Wilson not to play for them, but that's one guy. The Jets are paying a lot of money for like seven guys who are not on their roster, which is a more telling of bad decisions. So, you know, if you're going to criticize Joe Douglas, it's some of the bad decisions that have happened in the past are coming back to bite them now to where you have to give up a guy like JFM. And that's why I always push back on all the people who are like, the salary cap's not real. The salary cap's not real. I'm like, no, it clearly is real because they had to get rid of a good player because they couldn't afford him anymore. So, you know, would you rather have Hassan Reddick or JFM? I'd probably rather have Hassan Reddick, but, you know, I don't know. I feel like there probably was a way they could have figured this out ultimately, but it was surprising once I heard it was happening. Even more surprising when I saw the package. I think JFM he'll be a good fit on a Broncos team that's rebuilding, a young team. He's still pretty young, by the way, but he's one of the success stories the Jets have had in terms of player personnel and Joe Douglas removed this trade from it. You know, claiming him on waivers, developing him into a quality player, signing him to that extension between him and Quincy Williams. Like those are two of the best moves that Joe Douglas has made as the GM, finding these guys on the waiver wire and turning them into players. And he's a guy that was very popular in the locker room. They're going to miss him in there. And so this is a risk doing this, because now if you lose Reddick or Jermaine Johnson, I don't feel really great about their other options right now. So it's a risky proposition, especially because he didn't really get much return for it. And people are, I see anytime someone is cut or traded for cap space, everybody's like, all right, so who are they signing now? Are they going to get Justin Simmons now? This was not a trade to go and make another move. This was a trade to like not be right up against the cap, because once you go into paying your rookies and then going into the season, you need operating costs, you need practice squad costs, you need IR, you need any guys you might sign during the year, any trades you might want to make during the year. Like, they need a little breathing. They might even need to restructure some contracts still before the season, because they still don't have a lot. So, you know, I get why they did it, because they didn't really have many avenues to clear cap right now. But it's still, it's unfortunate, because this is a team that's all in right now, and you just traded away a quality player for nothing, essentially.
You mentioned a success story in JFM, and he leaves. Obviously, Bryce Huff, the biggest one, right? The success story, the guy you built into a
blossoming star. And you let him leave, yeah.
And he leaves, same position, or, you know, pass rush. It's definitely frustrating. The best teams continue to churn out guys from undrafted positions and late round draft picks. And we'll see if the Eagles, the Jets can continue to do that as well. Sorry, Eagles on the brain. All right. How about the undrafted free agents? The next batch of guys that the Jets, Joe Douglas and company, are going to turn into some quality NFL players. You gave me four to discuss of the list that are intriguing. Let's start right there. Defensive tackle, Leonard Taylor, Miami, and they get an edge rusher and Braden McGregor out of Michigan. Obviously, Braden McGregor coming off that national championship.
Yeah, Taylor, I think, was one of Dane had him pretty high on the list of like the highest graded like undrafted guys available. I think he had him as a fourth round, fifth round pick. Getting a guy that kind of value after the draft is pretty good. And that, you know, as you alluded to Bryce Huff, you know, Tony Adams is a success story. There's another one I'm blanking on. They've had some really good undrafted success. So Leonard Taylor, he's a guy that, I think he played a little out of position at Miami. I think he has the versatility to play tackle and defensive end a little bit. He's a little bigger. Dane wrote in the beast that he has untapped potential. So he's a guy that could, I think, if I was doing a 53-man roster right now, I think I would project him to make the team, because they have Quinnen Williams, they have Javon Kinlaw, they have Leki Fotu, and they have Solomon Thomas. But I think they could use another defensive tackle for both depth and like to develop as a guy that hopefully could become a starter down the line. Not saying he could, because, you know, if a UDFA becomes a starter, it's generally an outlier, but this guy has talent. So and the McGregor, again, like as we said, they just gave up. So McGregor and the kid from UConn, I think Eric Watts is his name. Both edge rushers they signed, who were both graded as draftable guys. I think Watts is more in the JFM mold as like a versatile guy, but these are both, you know, McGregor coming from a winning program. Dane had him as a sixth, seventh rounder, long, fast, and explosive is what he said. He compared him to Alex Wright on the Browns, guy who fought his way into like a rotational role, which if you can get that out of an undrafted guy, that's good. But there's a spot to be won on the edge depth chart, I think, because they didn't draft any, traded away JFM, lost Bryce. So there's a spot to be won there. And then I think I give you one more name, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned, you know, Michigan and McGregor, like there was all this talk where they were going to set the record for players drafted. Right. They ended up coming up, I think, fourth all time with 13. The record was Georgia with 15. And this is one of those guys, right? Like, Braden McGregor would have had to have been drafted for them to get to that record number. And he wasn't. The last guy you gave me was, we mentioned needing to add more offensive line, Brady Latham out of Arkansas, guard.
Yeah. And again, because they didn't draft any guards, and until they added a veteran, and I saw today that Nate Herbig might potentially be a cap casualty in Pittsburgh. If that happens, I think the Jets would love to bring him back. But if not, Brady Latham, Dane had him as a seventh rounder, the 22nd best guard in the beast. He played mostly left guard in college. I think some people project him as a center. This quote was from the beast. He said, "His grit and processing give him a chance to stick in the league." So. Whether it's on the 53 or in the practice squad, like he'll have a shot to make it too. He'll get some reps. You know, they have John Simpson, they have Elijah Vera Tucker, they have Wes Schweitzer, and then they have a bunch of guys fighting for jobs like Xavier Newman, Jake Hansen, and he can fight with those guys for a role. So I think if I was putting money on it, one or more of those four UDFAs is going to make the team. It may be somebody who we're not thinking of, like Tony Adams wasn't a guy I don't think that was getting a lot of hype, going into that year, you know, I remember last year, it's funny how quick fans fall in love with certain UDFAs because of their draft grade. Last year, Trey Dean was like a fan favorite darling. And then all of a sudden at the end of the year, the Jets didn't sign him to a reserve futures and he went to the Chiefs and got a Super Bowl ring out of it. And I think Jets fans kind of forgot about him. And I think he's on the Chiefs now. But so it is funny to think about that kind of, Xavier Gibson and Jason Brownlee were also guys they signed last year. Mm-hmm. So I'd say Xavier in particular, I think counts as his success story. Boy Green just pointed that out. Yeah. So I, I think one of these guys is going to make the team and, you know, based on injuries and all that stuff, might play a role, whether it's on special teams or rotating in on defense. So my money would be on the Miami tackle, Taylor, but I think any of these four guys can make it.
We're spending all this time talking about new guys fresh out of college or the CFL. Between now and training camp, are there any other veteran moves this team's going to make? There's some multiple questions in the chat about that.
Yeah, you know, Joe Douglas historically has always added a veteran or two, whether it's in camp, close to camp, or like in like August, whether that's like there's the Dalvin Cooks, the Dwayne Browns. Unless they have somebody suffers an injury, I don't think they need that. But yeah, you know, if I'm guessing like position wise, I would think an offensive lineman would be something they'd have their eye on. I don't think they'll add another safety unless one of these veterans keeps lingering and they really want to add them, but because I think they like their group that they have there. And I think that would pretty much, and maybe a receiver. I lean towards no on receiver unless like Corey Davis is willing to come back and he doesn't get the interest he was looking for, because I do think they love him. But right now, because you add Mekhi Corley to a group that already has Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams, Alan Lazard's not going anywhere, Xavier Gibson, and I think Irv Charles is a lock right now because he's their primary gunner. And then they love Jason Brownlee. So there's not really a lot of spots available, but if they wanted to go and bring a veteran in as like depth, because Mike Williams is banged up, like Corey Davis makes a lot of sense, or maybe there's still some veterans out there. MVS is still out there. So those would be the areas I would look at. I would expect him to still keep adding to the roster. I don't know if it'll be anything significant, but guard/center is where I have my eye on, whether that's Connor McGovern coming back or bringing somebody else in. I think that makes a lot of sense.
All right. Anything we missed?
I don't think so, but maybe.
I thought that was a lot. That was a good catch up.
We do have rookie camp, I'll say, on Friday and Saturday. Working on another story that'll come out before that. A couple stories that'll come out before then, some after. But yeah, I'll be at mini camp, and then OTAs. We're going to be at four practices, I believe, and then there's the mini camp if they keep it going. So there's still a lot of stuff coming up, a lot to talk about. I'm not sure when we're doing our next episode, maybe soon, but. Yeah, this is the part of the offseason where things do quiet down a little bit. So we'll see what Jets have in store for us to make me eat my words.
Exactly.
Yeah, you never know. All right. It's been a good episode. Thanks to Nick Bumgarner for joining us. Always love to have any guests. And, you know, we talk about Dane all the time, but like our draft team at The Athletic is
phenomenal,
is second to none. Nick's part of that. Obviously, Nate Tice has done a lot of stuff in that space as well. So, so good. Hopefully you tune into their live stream over the weekend too. The reaction to the Penix Jr. pick was priceless.
Oh my God. That was dream.
Just that was utter shock. Yeah, I thought Dane was going to fall off the couch. So they did a great job. Tons of coverage there. So thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Can't Wait podcast. We'll be back with you, but before you know it, we'll keep you updated.